Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Brainwaves, hear the world differently. Bringing community mental health to you, raising awareness and challenging stigma. Tune in to 3CR Community Radio, Wednesdays at 5pm.
Melbourne's Drive Time Radio program, featuring community organisations, powerful stories and information. Find us at brainwaves.org.au. Proudly sponsored by Wellways Australia.
I would like to begin by paying my respects to the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which I am coming to you from today. Land where at Brainwaves we tell our stories, and land where the traditional custodians have told their stories for many, many years before us, and continue to tell their stories. I would like to pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners who are listening today.
Hello and welcome to Brainwaves on 3CR 855am, 3CR Digital Radio and online at 3cr.org.au. I'm Mark and today we'll be chatting with Shayla Desanayake and Eleanor Duran from Impact Co about a recent study they completed that explored what an ideal inpatient mental health care experience might look like for adolescents and young people. Thank you for joining us today, Shayla and Eleanor.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, first of all, to get started, would you both like to share a bit about yourselves and about Impact Co and what your roles are at Impact Co?
Sure, I can kick us off. So, I'm Eleanor. I am a manager at Impact Co and we are a consulting firm that amplifies the impact of our organisations and communities we work with. So we work with clients who work in the health, mental health, First Nation space, social services, and we deliver a range of projects around strategy or evaluation. We help design services, and so we work with organisations that deliver those services as well as government departments, and that was who we were working with for the project we'll talk about today. We were working with the Victorian Department of Health. So that's sort of Impact Co. And a bit about me, I work at Impact Co, but I also have a history in community broadcasting myself. I was very involved in SYN Media, Student Youth Network, so it feels great to be back on the airwaves again.
The airwaves are happy to have you back too.
I'll throw to you, Shahela.
Beautiful. Thanks, Eleanor. I always joke that Eleanor should start her own podcast. She's very easy to listen to. My name's Shahela. I use she, her pronouns, and I am a consultant at Impact Co. I've been very, very lucky to work predominantly in the mental health design space as part of my career. And prior to that, had a pretty lovely stint working with young marginalized people experiencing barriers to accessing tertiary education.
All right. So I guess, first of all, just to sort of talk a bit about what you have been involved with the recent study. I understand that it was primarily looking at adolescent and youth sort of age range. How did those terms influence the service design and processes today? And who are we talking about when we do use those terms?
It's a great question, Mark. I think within a Victorian context, there are a few key age streams that we'd like to keep in mind when we're looking at mental health service design and health design more broadly. I think specific to this project, we were talking about adolescents and young people, so individuals aged between 12 and 25. And I think really with the recognition that adolescents and young people have really unique developmental, social, and emotional needs that differ across different life stages and developmental stages, and each of those really require distinct approaches that meet those needs.
And I think I'd just add there as well, you know, what we spoke about a lot in our project is even when you think about the age bracket of 18 to 25, you know, the experience that I had at 18 where I, still living with my family, versus 25 where I was living in a different city and in a share home. And I think sometimes you can broad brush young people, but even that 7 year age range can look really different at the lower end to the higher end. And I think what we definitely learned through the project is how important it is to take that, to understand that nuance, because I think, for me, no longer in the young adult category myself, but you can sort of create this big amorphous bucket of, young people, but there's actually really different experiences and ages and development and life stages that even happen within even that upper young adult group that Shehella was just talking about.
The study that you did take part in, could you talk a little bit how community-based approaches to care have replaced older models of care? And what are we looking at? When you were coming into the study, what was it, what existed, I guess is what I'm trying to ask.
So this particular project came out of the Royal Commission into Victoria's mental health care system. And as we know, that was a very comprehensive report that really amplified how important it was to engage with lived experience when implementing the recommendations and when implementing service design. So what we found with this project, which was about understanding the experiences of young people and adolescents when they've accessed inpatient mental health services or when they've tried to access those services. And the purpose of that was sort of to understand, that lived experience and how that could inform the department's future work. I think that brief helps explain what we've seen a lot of as our role as consultants is we've been lucky enough to work on a few projects that really have centered that lived experience and have been really sort of community-based models. So I think I'm not sure if we know between Shehella and myself, the comparison of how many models are changing away towards that space. But I think from our position, we're definitely seeing a lot more projects and work coming through that really focus on that. That are focusing on centering lived experience and are really challenging maybe more traditional sort of clinical models of care, which is, we've found very motivating, and obviously in the inpatient service setting, quite a historic model. So I think from our position, we're definitely seeing it increase, which is invigorating to see.
One of the joys of engaging people with lived and living experience is this opportunity for us as consultants to also be challenged in our thinking and understanding of systems. And I've personally had friends and family members have inpatient stays and witnessed, I guess, their desire for more community-based supports to be centered in their care post-discharge to really ensure that there's continuity there. And I think as health systems begin to move away from, these broader biomedical models into more social understandings of health and well-being, we're seeing a greater appetite for community-based supports, but also, I guess, a greater involvement, which is really heartening of people with lived and living experience in that service design and reform overall.
So at the moment, why is youth-specific engagement critical in mental health today?
It's a beautiful question, and I think in full transparency, when we saw it, we felt really refreshed by it, Mark. So thanks for asking. I think maybe before jumping into that, I think it's really worth acknowledging that there are some really pervasive and reductive narratives about young people and their capacity and capability to contribute to decision making. And as a young person, I'm 24, it can be really frustrating, particularly when your agency and capability are kind of dismissed. And I think what's really heartening is that through processes like this one, we're able to exercise and demonstrate, I guess, the knowledge and lived experience and expertise and like unprecedented levels of self-awareness that we as young people have at all levels of government at the moment, which is brilliant. And I think there's this growing recognition that young people are really best placed to communicate and convey the issues that are impacting us. And we should be involved in decision making about issues impacting our lives. In particular, in this mental health reform context, we heard anecdotally and we've witnessed in our own lives, I guess, young people feeling like they were displaced in discussions about and decisions about their own care and giving young people an opportunity to participate in mental health design and evaluation and reform is really critical because we not only ensure that their perspectives and concerns and aspirations are reflected and centered, but young people are given a sense of agency and autonomy again in terms of what services can and should look like moving forward. And I guess that's, yeah, probably why it's really critical to involve young people in mental health reform at the moment. But I'll throw to Eleanor as well.
I think you've outlined that really beautifully. And I think it's really, yeah, we'll talk about it more when we talk about this project, but it's really been an encouraging project to really see the high level of interest that young people wanted to be involved, what they were able to contribute, and yeah, how they were able to inform our work. Hopefully we can, yeah, be involved in similar projects, and that there's more projects going on outside of even us that really are looking to young people themselves.
That's really interesting because just what you're saying about the comments that young people have been making in regards to being able to have the agency of their own care, over their own care, it really reminds sort of it's really reminiscent of what people that struggled with their mental health in like the 70s or something, and how their agency was taken away, and they didn't get to have a say in how they were treated and what their recovery might look like. So it's really interesting that we're sort of back, sort of there in a way, but just with this age, the age group that we're talking about.
And I guess it's not, I think the really heartening part of this process as well is that the clinicians that we engage, the peer workers we engage, the community organizations and providers, and the Department of Health themselves really also acknowledge the need for young people to be able to exercise greater choice and agency within those settings. So I think while there are, I guess, remnants and parallels, there's definitely a broader shift towards providing young people with agency and choice and recognition that, again, they know themselves best and they're often best placed to inform that care.
So today in Australia or Victoria, I'm not sure what area you're particularly looking at. Is it for just Victoria or Australia sort of wide?
We were focused on Victoria.
Yeah, so I guess the question is today, what mental health challenges are young people in Victoria commonly experiencing?
Great question. And I'll preface this probably with a note that we're consultants by profession and probably researchers in our academic lives way, way, way long ago. I think we've seen research indicating that 2 in 5 young people experience mental health challenges in Australia. And there are a number of barriers, I guess, to limiting that access to not just mental health, but health and social services support, which means that often young people are either unable to access services or they're accessing them later or at a point where a crisis intervention is required, which is obviously incredibly unideal. But we also see, I guess, the compounding effects of marginalization, increasing the prevalence and exacerbating the effects of these mental health challenges. And I think particular groups coming to mind are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, culturally and linguistically diverse communities, refugees and asylum seekers, queer folk, those experiencing homelessness, living with a disability, young people who have had interactions with or at risk of interactions with the justice system. And, more recently, Eleanor and I attended Anglicare's launch of their new report, Somebody Else's Problem, which really highlighted, I guess, the prevalence of mental health challenges within young people who are in or have left out of home care. And yeah, there's a number that we could talk about. I think it's also like we can't talk about young people's mental health without also acknowledging the complex interplay of factors within their individual lives and the way that our collective well-being is really tied up and cannot really be disentangled from broader, social, cultural, political, economic, and environmental stressors and contexts. So I think, yeah, broadly, there's a lot happening for young people at the moment, and it's really understandable that we're all experiencing increased levels of distress as time goes on.
What systemic barriers are currently at play at the moment that certain reforms might address going forward?
I think what we certainly heard in sort of this project and maybe some of the other youth engagement we've done is probably the accessibility and availability of services. I think engaging with young people in rural and remote areas, there's less there. But even in sort of metropolitan areas, identifying a service that would be suitable, and have the right number of fees attached, have sort of low barriers to entry. I think what we've learned about engaging with young people in our project is it's very important to be very relational. We like to have, my name and Shahela's name on the project email. We like to be able to say, yeah, we'll see you at the workshop, so that there's sort of some continuity. And I think that's an important piece for sort of service reform as well. And I think to Shahela's point earlier, some of the groups or some of the communities and experiences she was mentioning obviously require a really tailored response. Thinking about young people experiencing homelessness or young people experiencing out-of-home care in conjunction with having mental health challenges, like that requires a pretty targeted response. And I think that's, a piece of, hopeful reform, ideal reform of being able to have sort of targeted responses to those sort of specific challenges that the young people are having.
Could you give a brief outline of what the youth engagement project you delivered recently and what its purpose was? What were you hoping to sort of explore during that?
So this project was related to one of the recommendations from the Royal Commission, particularly recommendation 21, which was aimed at creating better ways to deliver services for young people in bed-based mental health services by promoting consistent and developmentally appropriate treatment, care, and support. So we, as the consultants at ImpactCo, were a part of a broader project team, including one of our leaders, Jordan Firth, who's a young person and also has lived experience of inpatient mental health care, who was co-leading the project. So we as the sort of project team were engaged by the Victorian Department of Health, the Mental Health and Wellbeing Division, a team in that division to our brief was really to speak with young people and adolescents about to understand what an ideal service experience would look like. And the intention of doing that was because that team is developing two new statewide service frameworks that are going to guide how inpatient mental health services are delivered into the future. So they're sort of writing the guidelines, but they really wanted to make sure that there was some strong engagement with lived experience that could help inform how they wrote those. So we were speaking with young people and adolescents who'd had that lived experience. We also spoke with family members, supporters, carers of young people and adolescents with that experience. We spoke with some community-based services who might also support young people with that experience to sort of understand their perspective. And we also spoke with the area mental health services or the hospitals that deliver the services at the moment. So it was a really broad range. It was I think in the end, we spoke with 54 people with lived and living experience, which included 9 adolescents, 38 young people, seven family members, carers, and supporters. So we were really, thrilled with the number of people we were able to speak to. And those conversations helped inform that report, which really outlined that ideal experience. Which will the department will be taking forward into those statewide service frameworks.
I guess I'm curious. What did you learn throughout the research that you were doing? And did you learn anything you didn't think about or anticipate? And what was the impact or intended impact of the project?
I think that one of my key learnings, I can share mine, Shayla, first, sorry, and then throw to you. But one thing I reflected on was, even in my journey as a consultant at ImpactCo, I like to think that the way that we've engaged young people has gotten better and better, throughout different projects. And I think this project, I was really We were quite frankly really blown away with the number of expressions of interest we received, and we were really blown away with the expressions of interest came from very varied formats. You know, some people we know that it got shared around a few sort of informal social media networks like group chats or Facebook pages, and we were really blown away with that response. And I think a key learning for me is, you know, young people with a range of lived experience are willing and very keen to contribute to this sort of work. It's not necessarily too difficult. It just requires a bit of planning and thought to go into it. And then that they will respond and they will come, which is really encouraging and motivating for any kind of further work that we get to do with young people. So that was, I think, a key learning for me is always critical to set the project up right, and you will get really good engagement from young people, and they do really want to contribute to this sort of system reform work. What do you reckon, Shahela?
I was going to say that's a beautiful reflection, Eleanor. I think in the similar vein to partnerships and touching on something you mentioned earlier, Mark, as well about the importance of peer relationships and establishing rapport and trust really quickly, I think a really critical aspect of this project was the way in which we partnered with project partners and peer facilitators. So all of our facilitators had some sort of lived and living experience related to the project. And I think that was really powerful in terms of establishing trust really quickly with especially the adolescents and young people we worked with. I think of, yeah, Jordan Frith in particular really role modeled what brilliant peer facilitation looked like and provided a lot of incredible leadership on the team as well. But yeah, those peer facilitators and project partners contributed their lived and learned expertise to really enrich project process all the way through. And I think we couldn't underplay the importance of those peer relationships visibly to those young people in translating a feeling of safety and assumed knowledge and understanding. And I know that was also like healing for me and for many of the other peer facilitators who got to share that space.
The researchers on this project did work with a lot of, young people with lived experience of mental health challenges. What was it like working with that cohort during the research? And previously, had their input been sought? To what extent had it been sought? That's because I'm getting the impression that not a lot, previous to, what the research that's being done now.
Great, great questions. And Eleanor, feel free to jump in. But I think the headline for us is we love working with young people. They're a pleasure to work with every time. They're incredibly introspective and respectful, and they hold so much knowledge and expertise and are so generous in sharing it really meaningfully. I recall for on another project, like a young person spending 3 hours with me walking through an entire journey, through a service and just they had their iPad out, they were taking notes, they were critiquing, and it was the best 3 hours of my year, I think. But yeah, we get really energized to work with young people, and it's really energizing to see them become more and more embedded and prioritized in these processes. I think the only considerations we really had were around ensuring that there was sufficient safety protocols in place to make sure that they felt safe to participate, and we were able to hold that space meaningfully as well. And maybe just anecdotally, I think this project was really impactful as well because for a lot of young people, it was the first time that they had been heard and believed in their stories and experiences. And that was an honor for each and every one of us that got to share that space. And in terms of maybe input being explored and sought previously, I know young people are often the subject of a lot of research. I can't speak to previous engagement that the Department of Health have done. ImpactCo is always excited to work with young people, but I think we've come to this realization that it's really collective responsibility for consultants, service providers, organizations, and governments to provide young people with flexible, accessible, and meaningful opportunities to contribute to the issues and initiatives that impact them. And this project was definitely one of them, and we hope to see a lot more moving forward.
And I think the only thing I'll add to that, because I think you've spoken really well, but something that we Shahila and I certainly wanted, and Jordan and the broader project team wanted, was that we wanted people's first experience. If this was someone's, a young person's first experience in contributing to this sort of lived experience work, we wanted it to be really positive and to set a high standard so that they would wish to contribute again, and also so that they were contributing another project and it wasn't run as well. Hope, you know, that they could feel like they knew what it was meant, that what it should look like and what good would look like. And something that Shahela built into the recruitment process was we undertook screening calls with all of the young people who participated. And one of the topics that we covered in that call was, this is what it's what we mean when we say that we want to engage with you on your lived experience. This is what that will look like in the session. Like, we'll be asking questions like this. And often the response was from young people on the calls I was involved with was, oh, okay, great. I wondered, you know, what you would ask me, or what you sort of meant, because I think in the sector you can just go get so used to hearing it. But if trying to be really practical about what it means to contribute from your lived experience in a safe way that isn't super extractive from our end, and how to set the expectation for that. So I think, yeah, that was just one of the hopeful outcomes we wanted, was to make sure that people who, young people who are involved, would feel like they would want to be involved in similar work in the future, which I would love to be able to say confidently that's 100% happened, but we will have to see. But it's definitely something we were aiming for, yeah, through the project.
Shayla, you mentioned something about how you ensured that the younger participants were feeling safe. What kind of what did those safety measures look like to make sure that, everyone was feeling comfortable?
It's a great question. And it was thought about at every single stage of the engagement, from I guess recruitment through to debriefing. I think, as Eleanor mentioned, we had those screening calls, and those are really an opportunity not just for us to check in with the young people, but for the young people to check in and suss us as well. We're random consultants, they've never spoken to us. We're talking to people as young as 14, you know, they might not have engaged with this work before. And I think that helped provide a little bit of, not a little bit, it provided a substantial amount of safety even in those initial sections. I think the other things we did really well were providing a lot of visibility of the project team. So they weren't just, as Eleanor mentioned, emailing a random inbox, but they were also able to see videos and faces of the facilitators, give them a Google if they wanted to, and really establish that, you know, Impact Co and the project team more broadly, we're not only capable and legitimate, but we're real life people who really cared. And things like, there was a peer support worker in every single session and available to debrief after. We had really great protocols if someone was feeling distressed, which thankfully did not happen in session or out of session from our understanding, to ensure that that young person or that family care supporter member was able to access support. And I think, again, those peer facilitators, each and every one of us were able to bring, I guess, our own lived experience and our perspectives, and navigate those conversations with a lot of dignity and respect, for that young person. And I think those are probably the headline safety measures that we had. But I think they all contributed to this really beautiful space for people to, I guess, share their aspirations for what an ideal inpatient service was. And as Eleanor mentioned, the questions were definitely pivoted towards that aspirational service design. People did feel comfortable to reflect on some of the positive and some of the more negative experiences they had. But the joy of working with young people is, there was an immediate content warning before they shared that. They were so beautiful about the way they did, and invited people back into the conversation following as well. So I think it was definitely a shared effort, and I don't want to discount the work that young people did in cultivating that.
So at the moment, when we talk, I'm not sure if this is a question you're both able to answer, but at the moment, compared to the funding of services designed for adults, how does that compare to mental health services designed for adolescents and young people? Does that need to be changed? Is there any change need to occur in that regard, or what would you like to see?
Well, maybe I would just say that I think, for the context of this is a great question for the context of this project, because, The reality of inpatient mental health care access is that for young people and adolescents is that the limited number of beds there are has meant that young people have been staying in adult wards. That's a well sort of understood experience from the de department side, even when briefing us for this project of, we know this is a reality and we know that it's not ideal or probably as appropriate as possible going forward. And that was one of the experiences that did come up in this project of the what comes with that when you are a young person who is experiencing this sort of support, not within a peer group, which I think just probably broadly is a reflection of, what does happen when there's not tailored support, is that it's not an ideal one for young people, and how important it is that there are sort of youth specific programs and supports. That's not really super answering your question, but maybe Shahela has more to add about what we don't know much, but what we might sort of know about that split of funding.
And I think it's really helpful context, Eleanor. And there are dedicated funding streams for youth specific services. And while we don't have like the comparative funding models available, I think I'll shout out YACFIC's 2025 2026 budget analysis. It was a youth focused approach to analyzing the 2025 2026 Victorian state budget from the lens of young people, including its benefits and challenges. And they have a really comprehensive overview, I guess, of how mental health funding has been distributed for youth specific programs and initiatives.
In what ways would you like to see the findings from your recent study to be actioned in the future?
I think, we felt grateful and privileged to be selected to help the Department of Health with this piece of work. I think for us, we're looking forward to seeing the service frameworks that they're going to develop, knowing that our piece of work, can't be obviously implemented in full. There are, realities about the way the system's set up, but that in addition to informing the frameworks, I think what we really hope is that we are able to share the report back with everyone who is involved, and that it can be a resource for organizations who are delivering services for, that it's sort of a contribution to people's thoughts, because and that it can live on like that as a useful resource and sort of guiding vision, hopefully, for what the ideal service would look like for young people and adolescents in this case.
Completely agree, and I think it is just really this aspiration for the outcomes and the principles and the journey that those young people and the families, carers, and supporters that were engaged to become, I guess, universal as part of that implementation of the service framework and constitute, I guess, what good inpatient service experiences really look like for adolescents and young people moving forward.
Well, thank you so much, Shayla and Eleanor, for joining us on Brainwaves today. It was a pleasure to have you, and I hope what you've shared with us today has been enlightening to our listeners. If anyone wants to find out more about what you do, where can they go to find that out?
Great question, Mark. They can find us. We're called Impact Co. We're on LinkedIn, Instagram. We have a website. And we also probably must shout out the Lived Experience Registers, who we worked with quite closely for this project, and who are very useful organizations to get involved with if you're interested in contributing to this type of work. And that's Vimiac, Tandem, if you're a carer or supporter. And Shark at APSU, who focus on alcohol and other drug service access experience. And maybe I'll also shout out Satellite Foundation, who focus on young carers who also were of a monumental support for this project. Anyone else we need to shout out, Shahela?
There are so many partners that we could probably shout out, but I think you've covered them all, Eleanor. And
All
thanks for
right.
having us, Mark.
Oh, no problem. We'll include any links that to the organizations that were just mentioned on the 3CR website for anyone to have a look at if they're interested. But yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Brainwaves on 3CR. You can find more of our shows on our website, which is brainwaves.org.au, or on the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. Feel free to send us any feedback or suggestions for shows via email at brainwaves@wellways.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next Wednesday at 5 p.m. for another episode of Brainwaves.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.